Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 3rd, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. Right, Taylor? You've been on vacation for a few days. You went down to Delaware?
I'm here. I've returned. We got back on Saturday. It was nice to have a couple days off. I was totally in my element. I'm a big beach guy. So Wednesday, when I didn't have to work, I spent 5 hours on the beach by myself under an umbrella, just cranking through my audiobook and just chilling. Really a lovely time. Good to be back, and I'll be off tomorrow as well. So,
how about that? But I'll be off next week, so I'm not going to complain about that. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. We got a lot to get to today. We're going to be talking with Carl Ravitch and with Sarah Langs. The Cardinals have more positive tests from Sunday after having 4 positive tests on Saturday. We're expecting to get information more specifically about the Cardinals tests on Monday. And we'll see how that affects baseball's trajectory as it moves forward. Red Sox pitcher Eduardo Rodriguez will miss the rest of the season. The Red Sox made the announcement on Saturday. Rodriguez has been diagnosed with myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart that the team believes is a result of the left-hander's recent bout with the coronavirus. He tested positive for COVID-19 before the start of the summer camp. The Reds put first baseman Joey Votto on the injured list after the first baseman reportedly self-reported symptoms that may be related to coronavirus. They're just going to wait and see on that. The Brewers' Lorenzo Cain has opted out of the season. That announcement came on Saturday. The Mets outfielder, Yoenis Cespedes, in a crazy situation on Sunday, opted out of the season. There was a time on Sunday where the Mets weren't sure where Cespedes was, and then they ascertained that he had just left the team without telling anybody. And what his agent's saying is that he opted out because of COVID-19. The New York Post has a lot of details about Cespedes being upset with his playing time and the possibility that he might not reach some financial incentives in his deal. Here's Brody Van Wagenen, the Mets general manager, talking about the Cespedes decision.
Well, look, first off, you know, we support everybody's and every player's right to make this type of decision. And, you know, this is a challenging time for everyone. And so we will support him in that decision. It was surprising without question. And at the same point, we have to go forward, and we have to, you know, not allow, you know, anything to keep us from going forward and attempting to win every game and not have distractions from it. But again, the key takeaways from my end at this point are that, you know, glad that he's okay, because there was a period of time where we weren't sure, and glad, and certainly we'll support him and respect his decision as he goes forward. You know,
Brody Van Wagenen is in an interesting place with this situation, because he was the one who, as Cespedes' agent, negotiated the 4-year, $110 million deal with the Mets. So when he was asked how he looks back on Cespedes' contract, he had an interesting answer.
It's disappointing, you know, for the fans, you know, from my vantage point, you know, prior to coming to this job and then since, you know, he was a great player that I think everyone enjoyed watching play when he was at his best. There was optimism for his return. I know how hard he worked in his rehab to get back to this point. And I know this is a disappointing end to at least his 4-year agreement with the Mets, but, I know it wasn't for a lack of work ethic on his part to try to get back.
The Phillies plan to resume games today after no new positive tests. We also got word that the Miami Marlins have not had any new positive tests among their players the last 2 days. Mike Trout, who left the Angels to be back in New Jersey for the birth of his first child with his wife, Jessica, is set to rejoin the Angels later today. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, spoke with our Carl Ravitch over the weekend about the situation in baseball. This after Jeff Passan's report on Friday that Manfred had told Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, that the handling of the health and safety protocols needed to get better. The quote from Manfred to Carl Ravitch: "We are playing. The players need to be better, but I am not a quitter in general, and there is no reason to quit now. We have had to be fluid, but it is manageable." The Angels' Shohei Ohtani had to undergo an MRI yesterday after feeling discomfort in his throwing arm. He, of course, is coming back from Tommy John surgery. He allowed just an inning and 2/3 yesterday, throwing 50 pitches. Cubs and the Pirates played, and Javier Baez got it done.
Pitch on its way, and a line shot up the middle. The Cubs win it. Javier Baez rips a single to center, scoring Bodie, and the Cubs sweep the series. A 2-1 final as Baez rips a single to center field.
That was in the bottom of the 11th inning. That on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan. The Dodgers and the Diamondbacks and Mookie Betts got it done.
Now the 2-1 to Betts. We're going to fly ball to right field. And deep and gone into the pool. A pool shot. Mookie Betts a home run. His second of the year, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570 LA Sports. Now, Betts did have to come out of the game because of an issue with a finger on his left hand. The Yankees and Red Sox run Sunday Night Baseball. Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio had this game, and he called Xander Bogaerts' home run in the top of the first.
Next offering is popped in the air. That's deep to right field. Judge going back at the track, at the wall, and it's gone. It just gets over that auxiliary scoreboard in right. Xander Bogaerts with a two-run homer, and the Red Sox, for the first time this year, score in the first inning, and they jump out to a 2-0 lead.
The hottest player in baseball, Aaron Judge, went into Sunday having homered in four consecutive games. He came to the plate in the bottom of the second.
2-2 now. Here comes. Swing and a ball hammered left field. That one back there, if it's fair, it's gone, and that one is gone. Aaron Judge has done it again. Rips one down the line and out. He's homered in his fifth straight game, and the Yankees continue to generate the offense via the long ball. It's 3-2 New York.
The last Yankees players to do that, Alex Rodriguez in 2007. Rafael Devers came to the plate in the top of the seventh, score tied 6-6.
The 2-1 is hit in the air, right field, way back, and forget it. Way into the bleachers and gone. Rafael Devers is untighted, and for the third baseman, a solo blast, and here in the seventh, the Red Sox on top by the count of 7-6. 427 feet.
Well, we know this about the 2020 Boston Red Sox. Their pitching is a mess, and that manifested in the bottom of the eighth.
Here's the pitch. And that ball is hit hard and past the lunging Peraza out into center field. Around and in to score is Tauchman, and we're starting over. It's tied at 7 as DJ LeMahieu rips a single back up the middle. The stolen base pays dividends. And it's a 7-7 game.
Next to the plate, Aaron Judge.
The 2-0. Swing and a high fly ball, well struck. Left field, that one back there, and you can forget it. Over the bullpen and gone for Judge, his second of the night. And this one gives the Yankees the lead in the eighth. Aaron Judge has done it again, his sixth of the year. And the Yankees on top 9-7. As he deposited that one over the bullpen in left center.
So I was at Yankee Stadium last night and have a funny story about that home run that I'll be talking about with Carl Ravage coming up. But before that,
you can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard, it's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
Carl Ravage, Rabbit Train last night was at the Baseball Tonight desk. Carl, where are you today?
Today we are in Connecticut. We are waiting for a game Tuesday, which very well could get rained out with the remnants of the hurricane moving up the East Coast. That's supposed to be Nationals at Mets, minus, of course, Cespedes. Hey, the Mets could get rained out tonight. We could have conceivably been looking and may still be looking at a Jacob DeGrom, Max Scherzer rematch from opening day, but we'll see. So we're in Connecticut today.
Very nice. And there are issues about other postponements and concerns, Marlins, Cardinals, COVID, and we'll get right to that in a second. You had a conversation with the commissioner over the weekend. But first, I wanted to tell you, last night, you know, I had the privilege. I had such a good time being in Yankee Stadium, being in a ballpark, and not only that, but they gave me a choice of whether or not I, you know, to be in the visitor radio booth behind home plate or to be in center field. And besides the fact that it was unbelievably hot yesterday afternoon, it was so much fun to be watching the game from that vantage point. But I got to tell you, I could have had a Chris Chambliss, Howard Cosell moment. This is, of course, the home run that ended the 1976 AL pennant race. Keith Jackson was doing play-by-play sort of until Cosell took over. Give a listen.
Mark Littell delivers high drive. Hits it right center field.
That's gone.
It is gone.
Chris Chambliss has won the American League pennant for the New York Yankees. A thrilling, dramatic game with overtones of that great sixth game in the World Series a year ago and then the seventh game, too. What a way for the American League season to end. A spunky, young Kansas City team. Look at them mob Chris Chambliss. What a season he has had. What a series he has had.
So last night, Carl,
go all Aaron Judge on him? Is that what happened here?
No, I could have. That's what I was going to tell you. I'm at Yankee Stadium last night. It's empty. Those guys, Matt Vasgersian and Alex Rodriguez, are at the desk back in Bristol. And I could tell what was happening way before those guys could, because in the empty ballpark with no sound from anybody, at the moment that, you know, whether it was Rafael Devers last night or Aaron Judge would swing their bat and the ball would rocket off, the first thing you hear are the shouts of their teammates in the dugout. It's like, crack, yeah! And then I see the trajectory of the ball and hit it. And so Matt was like, and there's a long, and I'm like, that thing is gone. Like, and you could see it, how far it was going to go, it was, you know, 470 feet, that yeah. sort of thing. So I feel like I should get extra credit last night for jumping in and doing a Howard Cosell.
You are certainly appropriate in doing so. It did occur to me last night that you were, and I almost asked you on the show, what is it actually like to be in the ballpark? Because while we've done that with a few folks in Korea and Marley here, it is such a unique experience for you. And then to watch from your perspective, I mean, I got to believe that the last Judge homer landed in a place that you've, from where you were sitting, you've never been able to appreciate just how far that is.
Oh, 100%. And all of that underscored by the reactions of the other players. Like to hear the dugouts, each of the dugouts erupt when their guy was hitting a long home run, because Devers' home run was a monster too. But yeah, to hear the Yankee dugout react when Judge hit that home run was so funny. Here's the other thing too, and I think you'd agree with me. We've seen so many mistakes in these games, kinds of issues. And sitting behind last night, Aaron Hicks and Jackie Bradley Jr. and watching the outfielders, oh my God, it does remind you when you're watching your kids play T-ball, like picking daisies out in the outfield, because there's nothing around them. It's so dead. And I think it really goes a long way to explaining why we've seen so many mistakes. We saw some last night from Aaron Hicks, who's a good outfielder.
I think Alex brought it up. The idea that when you go into, and he, you know, obviously was at Yankee Stadium and played there, the idea that you have 40,000 people kind of always reminding you of the situation and your intensity level is up because of the noise there. You can't fall back on that. You don't rely on that anymore. So I do think that. I think we see it a lot with pitchers, bullpens in particular. The guys just aren't throwing strikes, or at least don't feel to be throwing strikes as often as they did in the past. And again, I don't know if that's crowd-related or we're making excuses for them. But with regards to the place the Judge hit the homer and the reaction, look, we've been doing this for 25 years, calling games, and whether it's a pitcher on the mound or the guys on the bench, they have such a great ability to distinguish between a ball that is absolutely a home run and ones that aren't. And full disclosure, I still struggle with it. You know, you're constantly like, is that, did he? And they know because of that sound, they're so familiar with it. So, yeah, I can absolutely appreciate when the ball hit the bat, it's a different sound. And then immediately the reaction of the bench lets you know that's gone. We don't even need to discuss it.
Yeah, it was a fun listen. It was like being back and covering a high school game, except these are the best players in the world. And Aaron right. Judge right now might be the best that he's been in years. Paul Imbecchietti sent me a note this morning about the number of home runs that he's pulled to left field. In 2018, yeah. he had 9 in 112 games. Last year, he had 6 in 102 games. This year, Carl, he's got 5 pulled home runs in 8 games, which tells you where he is right now.
Well, you know, anytime that you follow a sport, cover it, whether it be baseball, college basketball, football, and you see a player who you know is capable of things, and because of injury, their abilities are diminished a little bit. Again, part of that's a testament to how great these guys are when they do play and you know they're not 100% and still perform. And yet when they are at their maximum ability, you do get a chance to be reminded just how great this guy is. And I was left to think too, when you watch Judge last night, and you think long-term contract for somebody like that, and whether it's Judge or Soto, it doesn't really matter as long as they're young guys. You know what the potential and possibilities are, and you also realize the sort of vagaries of a human body, especially one that size, especially one required to do so much, that when you watch that, you're like, oh my gosh, like just give him $1 billion and let him be the cornerstone for the next 8 years. And then in the next breath, you're like, I can't do that. Like, I don't know what to do here, because he is that transformational a player. I mean, even in the studio with Teixeira, watching him warm up, because we have all those shots during baseball tonight, he is just so abnormally strong and large relative to baseball. Like, he's different. He's an outlier. And you're seeing when he's right and when he's physically 100% or close to it, what that potential is. It's amazing to watch.
And they love the work that Eric Cressy, who took over as their strength and conditioning guy during the wintertime, has done, not only with Giancarlo Stanton, but with Aaron Judge. And these guys are on the field, and man, they're doing some damage. Let's do some buy or sell about some topics here. Shohei Ohtani yesterday, an inning and 2/3, control problems again. 5 walks, 50 pitches, and after the game, he told the Angels that he had discomfort in his right elbow, got an MRI. Look, he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. As you know, it's not unusual for pitchers to have some discomfort in their elbow. You know, they break scar tissue, that sort of thing, and maybe that's what that is. But, man, he has really struggled with his command since they got back to the summer camp in the inter-squad games, in the exhibition games, and the starts that he's had. And we always come back to this thing about, you know, is it time for him to just become a full-time position player? Are you buying or selling the idea that that's what the Angels need to do, turn him into a position player?
I'm selling. I don't think they should do that yet. And I understand why a lot of people would. I think there's great value in having him be a position player and a hitter because he's got such a unique bat. I think he's uniquely talented as a pitcher too. And I'm of the push mind when it comes to athletes and being able to be a pitcher and be a hitter. I do think that their efforts to have him start on Sundays and be a position player 3 or 4 other days of the week is another example of how these things progress. And there's now another process with Ohtani, and maybe it's going to be pitch every 10 days for teams that are considering things like this. Last night, you know, he had tried to and was real close to getting out of that inning with no runs coming in. He had a strike within the K zone, and it wasn't even close. It was strike 3. Umpire called it ball 4. Next batter, he walks in. He was out of that inning, instead issued a walk, then issued another one, and Madden had to come out. So, look, I'm not suggesting that he's near close to what he can be, but I think he's uniquely talented. I think when he is right, that ability to pitch and hit should not be quelled. It shouldn't be – let's not just give in to, you know, old traditional norms. And And maybe that's just my philosophy on a lot of baseball things, but it is with regards to these individuals. If I had a son that could do both, I would hate to, because of we're coming off Tommy John and we've had two bad outings. And if you want to really microscope it, well, he got squeezed on a pitch. He could have been out of that inning without anything being given up. I'm not giving up on Ohtani.
The Chicago Cubs off to a great start, 7-2. You're buying or selling the Cubs?
I'm buying. I think they were a big disappointment last year. I think that there is some infusion. I think we've seen this before when you have a new manager, whether you're all familiar with him or you've never heard of him. I do think there's the ability to have a bounce. I also think that sometimes the new manager doesn't make a bit of difference. In the end, it has to do with the players playing to their abilities. And I think we're seeing that, you know, with the Cubs. We're seeing it with their defense. We're seeing the offense, whether it's Contreras or Rizzo. You know what they're capable of. I think the lineup where Schwarber is hitting, I think that they realize, look, and I'm sure Ross's message in the beginning was, we suck last year. We're way better than this. Let's just play to what we are capable of playing to, and we should be okay. So I'm buying the Cubs.
Minnesota Twins, 7-2. Buying or selling the idea that this is just merely an extension of that excellent season they had last year?
I think it's an extension. Still a little worried about a bullpen. I do think their starting pitching is better. I think the moves they made are good. Donaldson, I don't even think, played yesterday, and they still put up runs. And I think we're kind of seeing that the White Sox, as great and as fun as them, they may be the most fun team to watch, aren't yet ready. And I think that helps the Indians. Helps the Twins. I do think the Indians are, you know, are pitching out of their mind. So I do think that this is an extension. I'm buying the Twins.
The New York Mets, are you buying the idea that they are terrible?
Well, yes, they are. You know, I do think, though, there are a bunch of superstar hitters like Yelich, Bellinger homered yesterday, but struggling. Pete Alonso struggling like last year didn't even happen. Look, I think eventually they'll hit. I think a lot of this stuff has to do with the fits and starts of the training camp. The expectations on a lot of these guys are great. You have 60 games, so a slow start's magnified. But look, the Mets bullpen is a disaster. They're just not, they don't appear to be a very good team, and they are in a division where you dig a hole. I think it's a lot harder to get out of that hole. I know what the schedule moving forward is for the Mets. You know, and you had a superstar player basically bail on the organization yesterday. So, yeah, I buy that they are a mess and a disaster right now.
Yeah, and I got to say, I feel like I underrated the Braves, even though I picked them to win the division the last couple of years. But just being around them in spring training for a couple of days, there was a lot of confidence there. And they are playing so well, despite the fact Ronald Acuña Jr. hasn't gotten off to a good start. So, that team, you know, reestablishing itself at the top of the division. You made reference to the fact or what happened with Yoenis Cespedes yesterday. Man, it was striking that even longtime Mets writers who are used to Mets dysfunction were saying it was an unusually dysfunctional day for the Mets in the way that played out.
So bizarre, Buster. I mean, it shows a complete lack of respect for your organization, for your management, for your teammates. Look, this is a time where you actually could say to your manager, your teammates, certainly management, look, I've had all these surgeries, whatever it may be. I'm not comfortable playing in the COVID era. Regardless of the numbers you're putting up, regardless of your opinion of the team, you are actually given a green slip to cash in. Look, not for me this year. And I don't think anybody, you know, there would have been some people who were like, really, he's quitting on the team. But again, personally, I'm not judging somebody who decides that this season for health risks is not for me. And yet you didn't take door number one, which was available to you. You went and found door number three, which was, I'm not going to call anybody. I'm just going to bail. I'm packing up and I'm leaving. But that I don't even understand it. And I asked Mark Teixeira in the studio, like, what if you were an owner of a team, what would you do next year if Cespedes said he wanted to play? And he said, minimum contract with a whole bunch of incentives. Prove to me you want to be a part of this.
I totally agree. That it was confusing to me. Because in the way that he handled this, and look, we have not heard from Cespedes directly, you know, his representative saying that it was because COVID. New York Post has all kinds of reporting today that he was upset about the fact that he wasn't going to be in the lineup and couldn't reach some of the financial incentives that are in his contract. But this is someone who, over the course of this four-year, $110 million deal, and he's not going to get all 110 because of his injury with the Wild Boar and the COVID. Right. But over the course of those 4 years, 127 games, 28 homers, 75 RBI. And this, at the very least, was a month and a half, you know, 2 months to reestablish your credentials before you go out in the market.
Look, you would think, but again, part of me is aware that I think some agents recognize that owners can't control themselves. And you know what? My guy's one of the great power hitters in baseball in recent years. I don't want him to do this, but this is his choice. I think we'll still find a job down the road. So I'm not going to worry about it, because it's not like some team isn't going to be willing to take a flyer on him. And he didn't want to do it. For whatever reason, I don't know if it was incentives in his contract. He wasn't feeling good about himself. He wasn't feeling good about the way that Rojas was managing. He didn't like the way that Jeff McNeil was fielding. Who the hell knows? But that was just an odd way to bail on a team at a time where the door is open for all sorts of communication and acceptance of the decision, and he chose to move the other way from that. I don't get that.
All right. As you and I talk early on Monday morning, we're awaiting the word on how many positive tests the St. Louis Cardinals have in their most recent wave of testing. Over the weekend, you talked with Rob Manfred, the baseball commissioner. His response to you certainly got a lot of play all around the sport. How would you describe where we are and whether or not we continue the 2020 season moving forward?
Well, look, I think one of the responses that I saw often to his comment, and it literally was quoted directly, and that was the extent of what he wanted to say on the subject. The response of it's always about the players. It's always about the players. Why is it only on the players and it's not on blah, blah, blah. Right now it is on the players and the organizations. There is no other way, I think, to look at it. If you adhere to the protocols, all of them, you will have, in my opinion — this is not his opinion, my opinion — minimize the risk. I think you look at your own family and you recognize if you walk into a store or if you decide to go to a restaurant, you are increasing the risk of getting sick. To me, these players and these organizations have put themselves in positions to succeed. The bubble quality of life that they live, as bad as it may be in their opinion, or as good as it may be in the opinion of many, hotel, five-star rating, great food, you're taken to and from, you're tested all the time. You have, if you adhere to those for 66 days or however long the postseason goes, you have really minimized the chance of getting the virus and subsequently spreading it. And if you don't, and again, there are rumors about behaviors on different teams, which certainly would lead you to be like, why would you even open that box up? Why are you subjecting yourself to a restaurant, to a bar, to whatever it may be, when you literally know, if you stick your finger next to that fire on the stove, it's going to burn? Yeah, but I bet it's not going to burn me so bad, so I'm going to try it. Like, there is zero tolerance for not abiding by the protocols. And it is one of these situations where if you don't abide by them, you're going to get burned. Like, there is no gray. You're going to get burned. And I understand the strain on the patience of individuals and how much it may suck relative to what you're used to. But if you want to continue to play, there is only one way to do it. You know, there's no gray area here. It's black and white, and it's as simple as that. And I think he's frustrated in some of the behaviors, which indicate you're living in the gray. You don't really want to abide by the protocols 100%.
Along those lines, then, Carl, do you think there'll be some sort of a change? Because of course, all of this is happening in concert with the Player Association. Do you think there might be some sort of a change where they say, you know what, if we're going to try to make this work, we got to have everyone on board? Do you think there might be some kind of agreement where the player association agrees to some sort of penalty or some way to deal with these situations where if a team, for example, or Major League Baseball finds out that, you know, player X was out in a restaurant someplace, that they would say, okay, we got word of that. You're off the field. You're putting everybody else at risk.
Well, I think the first step has been taken when you have a compliance officer assigned to every team.
Right.
I think the idea is you now have a hall monitor, which we didn't have before, and now the hall monitor sees Johnny walk down the hall when he shouldn't. Well, Johnny can get in trouble for that. So I think that is the first step to what you are alluding to, which is we have to have some type of accountability and responsibility on the individual. And if they break it, there has to be some type of punishment, because you are not jeopardizing only your health. You're jeopardizing your teammates. You're jeopardizing the other team you're playing. And you're ultimately jeopardizing the sport. The problem with what we're talking about here is it's not golf or tennis. This is not individual sports. You could have Nick Kyrgios decide not to play in a championship this summer as a tennis player. The tennis tournament still goes on. You know, you have player X, in fact, player Y on his own team. They go play another team. Well, X and Y have just infected Z, and he's infected A, B, and C in his own team. So you understand it's not a rocket science to understand the domino effect of this. I do think that there should be some responsibility and accountability and subsequent punishment if you ignore it. You're literally thumbing your nose at what you know has, I don't know what the percentage is, but a real high percentage chance of succeeding. And you've unilaterally made the decision. Yeah, but I think my way is going to work too. So I'm going to go get a steak dinner at this restaurant. No, we lose.
Last one for you, Carl. Just based on your conversation with Manfred, who is the one person who has the power to shut this down, how close is he to his breaking point?
Well, I think his breaking point, and again, I'm speaking for him. My sense is that his breaking point is the frustration in the behavior of the player. And I don't think that he looks at this in a vacuum and says it's only the players that have sort of been messed this up here. I think at this stage of where we're at, it's now on the player and the organization. I don't know that there's a lot more that Major League Baseball, in concert with the Players Association, can do to ensure that their players are safe. I think now that you have the rules, you as the player and you as the organization have to make sure that the rules and protocols are followed. It's not as if Major League Baseball can do that. You have to do that as an individual, as a team, as an organization. I think his frustration and his tipping point will come when he hears more and more that this team didn't listen, or that player was out there, or three guys were seen at a nightclub, whatever it may be. That to me indicates, you know what, you're not taking it serious. You're not paying as much attention as you need to. We will and should shut it down. If I were in that position and I were getting reports, and I'm not saying he is, but if I were getting reports, hey, did you know that so-and-so was out last night? Hey, I just saw, here's some pictures of these three guys walking into a restaurant. I would drive myself nuts. Wait a minute. What happened to, we wanted to play more than 60 games. How would we play more than 60 games and behavior like this is going on? Like they're contradictory behaviors. So adhere to all the rules and protocols, as difficult as it may be on your life, or don't, and have the season wiped out and pay stops and there's no baseball.
Either got to be all in or you're going to be all out. What it really comes down to. Exactly. All right, Carl. Good to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences.
So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Numbers game.
Sarah Lang's a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, you're also a longtime Mets fan. So, of course, this morning as I was prepping for the show, I thought of you with everything that happened with Cespedes yesterday. And I mentioned to Carl Ravitch that it was striking how longtime Mets beat writers were talking about, even within the Mets realm of dysfunction, this was one of the most dysfunctional moments. I'll let you rank that. Like, when you think back at the Mets history, what would be the height of dysfunction? I have an opinion on it. I actually think it's the wild boar story involving Cespedes. That would be the most Mets thing ever. What about for you?
Yeah, it's a good question. It certainly felt... like it was on the list there. And I definitely remember where I was sitting when the wild boar thing happened. And it's definitely one of those moments that I remember. You remember hearing the report, you remember learning what happened. And that's just so memorable because it was so fascinating. I think yesterday was a little different because, I mean, when we first got that statement, I was very concerned, you know, and I think obviously that's part of it is the way that it was handled. There was initially a lot of concern for, I think, Cespedes' well-being, and then it turned out that that wasn't a concern, that wasn't what was going on. So I think it was just different kind of emotions, but ultimately, you know, wish the player well, you know, obviously, and you can't fault any of these guys for doing this, but the way it played out was certainly something, certainly different.
Yeah, there were a lot of people around the game who were wondering why the Mets just didn't wait for resolution before putting out this statement. Because you and I both know there have been plenty of games that have started when the media was not aware that player X was at the ballpark or not at the ballpark. And they could have gotten a full resolution of it before they put out that statement. But that's the Mets. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number one.
Actually, you go number three, Taylor.
Oh, damn it. I'm new to the numbers game. This is the second time we played. So, okay, let's start again. Number three
is 7-1. So after that win last night, the Yankees are now 7-1 this season, which is tied for their best 8-game start in franchise history. And because they're the Yankees, they've done it a bunch before. So they did it in 2003, 2002, 1999, 1988, 1958, 1956, 1949, and 1933. They went on to win the World Series in four of those seasons, which is obviously the next question you should be asking there. And looking ahead to tonight and to future games, they only made it to 8-1 in 2003 and 1988. So if they win again tonight, it would be a much smaller tie there. And the Yankees have just looked absolutely unstoppable. Even Paxton's velocity down again last night, all of these other things. It does not matter because of the guy we're going to get to in number two.
Number two.
So number two is 5. Aaron Judge has now homered in 5 straight games, which is by far at this point the longest stretch of his career and the longest by a Yankee since Alex Rodriguez in 2007. And the only Yankees players to homer in more than 5 straight games are Lou Gehrig in 1931, who homered in 6 straight, Roger Maris in 1961, also in 6 straight, and Don Mattingly in 1987 with 8 straight, which of course is tied for the Major League record. And his second home run last night went 468 feet. And I think the most fun thing about that is that's only his 6th longest home run. 468 feet sounds like a long way, but Aaron Judge, that's only 6th on the list.
Number one.
Number one is 9. So Tyler Alexander of the Tigers yesterday struck out 9 batters in a row, tying the American League record, which was set by Doug Fister, also a Tiger, and just one shy of tying Tom Seaver's overall record of 10 straight. Alexander also set a record for consecutive strikeouts in relief. He did not start the game with this. This was not the starter. This was someone pitching in relief. And I think this is a lot of fun. Looked into the consecutive strikeout guys last night a bunch. The first pitcher to strike out 9 in a row, which was the record until 1970 when Seaver set it at 10, was Mickey Welch in 1884. And it wasn't actually officially recognized until the 40s because the 9th batter, it was a pass ball. So it was dropped third strike. And because of that, in the 1800s, they weren't sure if that was going to count as a strikeout, even though we know that it does. So because of that, it's this incredible record from 1884, but it wasn't even really recognized until the 1940s. So, you know, Tyler Alexander of the Tigers in those doubleheaders, those 7-inning doubleheaders in the second game, just, you know, get him some love there. 9 straight strikeouts for the Reds.
And Sarah, the Detroit Tigers and the Baltimore Orioles off to surprisingly good starts in this incredibly small sample of games that we've seen. Give me the name of a contending team that you feel like that, you know, going into this season we thought would be pretty good, and now you're kind of thinking they might be in trouble.
Well, I'm a little concerned about the Rays. I mean, they're only 4-6. I think that even that kind of deficit at this point is very much, you know, easy to overcome. But they just got swept by the Orioles. Their offense has not looked great, and it really didn't look great against the Orioles. And we know what the Orioles pitching did last year, giving up the most home runs in Major League history, and the players are pretty much the same, aside from, you know, opening day starter fill-in. And I don't know. I think that they're only +2 run differential right now. I think we all expected that pitching to be outstanding and the offense to really crush, and we haven't quite seen it yet. So a lot of people were picking them as a World Series team, and I think that was a lot of fun. I think it would be great to see that, but they need to get it together a little bit to get there.
All right, Sarah. Good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All ready, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Monday. We have a lot of Mets intrigue here, as we've talked about throughout this podcast. Kyle Benning is up first. He writes in, where does the latest chapter of the Cespedes Mets saga fall on the all-time list of most Mets thing ever? Sarah Lang's answered that question. You alluded to your answer. What do you think?
Yeah, and Kyle Benning, in his question, he mentioned the Wild Boar episode as well. That's the number one. Like, when you have a star player get injured with a confrontation with a Wild Boar, and we never really have gotten full details on that, and of course, none of the details have been confirmed, so who knows what happened, but that was the most Met story ever.
Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim writes in, hey Buster, when is the last time a trade or free agent signing worked out for the Mets? Surely we don't have to go back to Beltran or Efrod, do we? Hitters, bullpen starters, they seem to have zero luck.
Look, they made the World Series in 2015, so they've done some things well. But in the last 2 years, since Brody Van Wagenen took over, you know, I said at the time, I thought it was a mistake to hire someone who didn't have practical experience in that job. The signing of Jed Lowry, the Robinson Cano trade, where we are with Edwin Diaz. We haven't even gotten into that today and how much he struggled. Everything with Cespedes, it's ugly.
RD, our guy Reggie at BaseballNerd07 writes in, Buster, is this the day Ohtani became a hitter only?
No, I don't think so. I think that Billy Epler, who's the general manager of the Angels for now, has a lot of, I think, feeling a personal obligation to follow through with Ohtani, who had choices about where he could go. And in terms of Ohtani following his dream, being both a pitcher and a hitter. And I hope that what they find when they do the MRI is that he had scar tissue break or something that's typical for pitchers coming back from Tommy John.
Corey Rueckert writes in, if a player becomes symptomatic on the road like Votto did this weekend, what's the protocol for returning that player to their home city?
I've heard stories about teams basically putting a player in a car and sending them back, that sort of thing, driving all the way back. I don't think they fly them. You know, we got the story from Jesse Rogers the other day about how some of those Marlins who tested positive basically were put on buses and driven back from, where were they? Philadelphia? Yeah. From Philadelphia all the way down to, all the way back home to Miami. Think about that.
That's a tough bus ride of shame there.
Yep.
Last one for today. Tommy Egan writes in, "Hi, Buster. Do teams and or Major League Baseball have staff rounding up historic / milestone items like baseballs, bats, and gear as in normal years? Are they considered essential staff and travel with the team or stay on the home ballpark?"
No, they wouldn't travel someone just to collect baseballs, milestones, that sort of thing. I did notice last night, and it came up during our broadcast when Aaron Judge hit his first home run. We were talking about, boy, could I walk over as a sideline reporter and just go pick up that baseball because it's empty? And we got word, no, you are not to go and be picking up baseballs in the stands. And then I was watching, and there was some Yankees attendant after home runs going up and picking up the baseballs.
Got it. Yeah, that's a hard no. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone. And shout out to my guy, Troy Farkas, who will be back with you all tomorrow for doing an excellent job filling in last week.
And before we go, I want to tell you today on ESPN Daily, hockey is back. Hear the breakdown of all the NHL action and why it's all happening north of the border. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Carl, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we must fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.